Today is Wednesday, January 20th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Democrat Joe Biden is sworn in as the 46th president.
President Biden will go to the other side of the Capitol and oversee a military procession.
Also ahead, a new poll shows coronavirus and the economy are top priorities in the U.S.
Containing the virus and repairing the damage it has done are the top priorities for Americans.
Plus, withdrawal of U.S. troops raises security concerns in Somalia. These stories and more are next. Democrat Joe Biden is just beginning his first day as the 46th President of the United States. His midday inauguration ceremony has been designated a national security event following a deadly assault on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump 2 weeks ago. Thousands of National Guard troops and security personnel, drawn from dozens of other federal agencies, are keeping vigil on the streets of Washington. VOA's Steve Reddish reports the city remains calm as Biden and new Vice President Kamala Harris carry out a flurry of events after their swearing in.
So far, there hasn't been any word of any big breach, any major breach of security. The city is pretty much on lockdown, especially around the Capitol area and the National Mall, which is closed to any observers. Anyone who wants to go down to watch the inauguration cannot because the mall is closed. It's rather remarkable. I've been here for about 8 different inaugurations. And this is the first one that feels rather strange. The silence is deafening downtown.
Can you give us a rundown of some of the events expected today?
After the inauguration, usually there is a lunch inside the Capitol, and that is postponed today. So President Biden will go to the other side of the Capitol and oversee a military procession designed to show and demonstrate the peaceful transition of power in the United States. And after that, he will join 3 other former presidents, Presidents Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and George W. Bush. The 4 of them will go down to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington National Cemetery and lay a wreath. And then Biden will be escorted by all branches of the military to the White House, where he will then begin the work of being the President of the United States. The usual parade from Capitol Hill to the White House has been scrapped because of coronavirus issues as well as security issues. So instead of a parade, there will be a virtual parade, a videotaped presentation from around the country of various different people celebrating the inauguration of the President of the United States. And in the evening, instead of the usual inaugural balls, that will be replaced by another virtual televised event to celebrate the incoming president with many famous musical acts and actors and actresses participating in a 90-minute celebration of Biden's inauguration.
Have you ever witnessed an inauguration like this?
I have seen inaugurations since 1973 in person. This is going to be the strangest inauguration I have ever witnessed. The emptiness of the mall, of the National Mall, where people gather to both protest and celebrate. There's an emptiness there that is profound, but also I believe Joe Biden will turn that around and make that emptiness into something that he can work with and use to be able to project his message of unity onto the rest of the country.
That's VOA Steve Reddish speaking with me in Washington. Joe Biden plans to issue several executive orders after taking the oath of office. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Among other things, Biden will reverse President Trump's bid to leave the Paris Climate Accord and cancel his travel ban on visitors from several predominantly Muslim countries. He's also planning a major reversal of Trump immigration policies, aiming to release a sweeping bill today with a goal of giving an 8-year path to citizenship for some 11 million people living in the U.S. without legal status.
A new poll shows the coronavirus and the economy are top priorities for the new U.S. president. AP correspondent Mike Hempin reports.
The poll, conducted by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, shows containing the virus and repairing the damage it has done are the top priorities for Americans as Joe Biden prepares to become the nation's 46th president. Overall, 53% of Americans name COVID-19 as one of the top five issues they want the government to tackle this year. 68% mention the economy. 24% of Americans cite race relations as a priority. That compares with 10% who cited it a year ago. Mike Hemp in Washington.
The incoming presidential team devoted the eve of the inauguration to honoring the 400,000 American lives lost to COVID-19. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Soon after flying into Washington, D.C. ahead of the inauguration, President-elect Joe Biden presided over a memorial service at the Reflecting Pool to let families know that those who died of COVID-19 are not forgotten.
It's hard sometimes to remember, but that's how we heal. It's important to do that as a nation.
Vice President-elect Kamala Harris noted so many had died in isolation without friends or family.
We grieve and begin healing together.
Rows of white monoliths were lit along the Reflecting Pool. Biden has proposed a $1.9 trillion package to help the nation recover from the pandemic. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
A few hours before Biden's noon inauguration, his predecessor, Donald J. Trump, boarded the presidential jet Air Force One for a last time. He spoke briefly to hundreds of supporters gathered at the military airfield near Washington to see him off.
A goodbye. We love you. We will be back in some form.
President Trump broke with 150 years of tradition and did not attend his successor's swearing-in. Instead, he and his wife flew to his private club in Florida, where they will be staying for now. Vice President Mike Pence, however, was representing the Trump administration on the inauguration stand with Biden and Harris today. In a video released Tuesday by the White House on YouTube, President Trump said he's truly proud of what he has achieved in the past 4 years. More from VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, who was in the West Wing for the president's final full day there.
Trump, in the nearly 20 minutes of remarks, does not mention his successor, former Vice President Joe Biden, by name.
This week we inaugurate a new administration and pray for its success in keeping America safe and prosperous. We extend our best wishes, and we also want them to have luck, a very important word.
Trump boasts he created the greatest economy in the history of the world and says he's especially proud to be the first president in decades who has started no new wars. Steve Herman, VOA News at the White House.
Trump granted clemency to former White House aide Steve Bannon as part of a wave of pardons and commutations issued in his final hours in office. He did not pardon himself, members of his family, or lawyer Rudy Giuliani. Gloria So of Reuters reports.
U.S. President Donald Trump has pardoned former White House aide Steve Bannon. It's part of a wave of over 140 pardons and commutations he is issuing during his final hours in office. But Trump has not pardoned himself, members of his family, nor personal lawyer Rudy Giuliani. Bannon was a key advisor on Trump's 2016 campaign and some of his staunchest anti-immigration policies as president. He was charged last year with swindling Trump supporters over an effort to raise private funds to build the president's wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. In a statement, the White House called Bannon an important leader in the conservative movement, known for his political acumen. Trump also pardoned Elliot Broidy, a former top fundraiser who pleaded guilty last year to violating foreign lobbying laws, and former Detroit Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, who was serving a 28-year prison term on corruption charges. Rappers Kodak Black and Lil Wayne, who were prosecuted on federal weapons offenses, were also granted pardons. According to a source familiar with the situation, White House officials told Trump he shouldn't pardon himself or his family because it might look like they are guilty of crimes. While presidential pardons are typically given to people who have already been prosecuted, they can also cover for conduct that has not yet resulted in legal proceedings. Trump will leave office on Wednesday when Joe Biden is sworn in as the next president of the United States.
That's Reuters correspondent Gloria Tso reporting. Trump leaves office facing an impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. The House of Representatives last week voted to impeach him for instigating the mob that attacked the Capitol on January 6th, making Trump the only president to be impeached twice. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell says the former president provoked the Capitol siege. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
It was a remarkable statement from the Senate Republican leader.
The mob was fed lies.
On the floor of the U.S. Senate, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell laid the blame on President Donald Trump for the deadly riot at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
They were provoked by the president and other powerful people.
McConnell's remarks came on Trump's last full day in office, and as St. Anselm College's Chris Galdieri notes, in advance of a second Senate impeachment trial for Trump.
My guess all along has been that Mitch McConnell really holds the outcome of that trial in his hands.
The House impeached Trump last week on a single charge, incitement of insurrection. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Three self-proclaimed militia members are the first charged with conspiracy in the attack on the U.S. Capitol. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
Three self-proclaimed members of a paramilitary group are the first people charged with conspiracy in the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Federal investigators say a Virginia man, Thomas Caldwell, was the apparent leader of a plot to attack Congress and the Capitol building on the 6th of this month. The FBI details the communications between Caldwell and former Marine Donovan Kroll and Jessica Watkins, both from Ohio, all of whom claim to be members of the right-wing militia group Oath Keepers. One message refers to members of Congress as traitors. In another received by Caldwell during the insurrection, the center writing, "All members are in the tunnels under the Capitol. Seal them in. Turn on gas." All three face several federal charges, including conspiracy, conspiracy to hurt an officer, and violent entry. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Dozens of UK music stars, including Elton John, Ed Sheeran, and conductor Simon Rattle, says musicians have been, quote, shamefully failed, unquote, by the British government, which has left them facing post-Brexit restrictions on touring in the European Union. In a letter published Wednesday in the Times of London, more than 100 musicians such as Sting, Pink Floyd's Roger Waters and Roger Daltrey of The Who said the new UK-EU trade deal would make it impossible for many British musicians to perform in the EU. Britain's departure from the EU means the UK citizens can no longer live and work freely in the 27-nation bloc. Grocery stores, gas stations, and other shops are reopening in quick-hit Indonesian city, where debris still covers streets and searchers continue to dig in the rubble for more victims. Disaster officials say immediate food and water needs have been met, and the local government has started to function again in the hardest-hit city of Mamuju and the neighboring district of Majin on the Sulawesi Island. But thousands of people are living in shelters or sleeping outdoors, fearing aftershocks. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The U.S. withdrawing of troops training Somalia's elite forces has raised concerns about security and stability in the country. But Somali officials and analysts note the country will still count on the U.S. air power against Al-Shabaab militants. Mohamed Kahiye reports from Mogadishu.
Somali Prime Minister Mohamed Hussein Roble and senior defense officials in his government toured Ballydoggle Air Base south of the capital Mogadishu this month to thank U.S. forces before they withdrew. The United States Africa Command on Sunday confirmed the estimated 700 U.S. troops in Somalia had been repositioned in the region as ordered by President Donald Trump. Officials say security cooperation between the United States and Somali forces reduced the threat from Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. Somalia's Information Minister Osman Dube says he expects U.S. military assistance will continue after this week's pullout.
He says the withdrawal of U.S. troops is not a permanent decision, nor is it the end of the security and military cooperation. It's normal technical maneuver. He says adding that cooperation with Washington has been strengthening in recent years. Somali officials say U.S. training and drone strikes targeting Al-Shabaab leaders and gatherings reduced hit-and-run attacks against African peacekeepers and Somali politicians. No disruption is expected in the use of drone strikes, which the United States controls from outside of Somalia. But the security analysts worry the pullout of U.S. troops will give the militants an excuse to launch fresh attacks on international targets like African Union peacekeepers. Abdisalam Guled is former deputy director of Somali National Intelligence.
I think it will be very difficult for them to operate without the support of Americans. Not only the Somalis, but the African peacekeepers will suffer, and the Somalis will suffer more. The African peacekeepers and the Somalis were getting more support from the Americans over, you know, the support of drones were helping a lot. That managed to Al-Shabaab not be able to use all the military capability and capacity.
With withdrawal of American troops just ahead of next month's presidential and parliamentary elections, security concerns have been growing. Veteran Somali lawmaker Mohamed Omar Talha says international security support must be maintained. He says terrorism is not only a threat to our region, it's a global threat which needs an international response that fills the gap left behind. Talha says they hope the new U.S. president will renew Washington's security role in Somalia. The U.S. military said its troops in Somalia will be repositioned in the region with its military base in Djibouti and a shared air base in Kenya as likely options. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
South Africa is reporting both good and bad news in the nation's battle against the coronavirus. The health minister Tuesday noted a decline in confirmed cases, but the head of the coronavirus task force warns a new variant is more transmissible than earlier versions. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
First, the good news from South Africa's health minister, Dr. Zweli Mkhize. The nation is still experiencing its second wave of the virus, but in the past week, Mkhize said the Rainbow Nation saw a 23% decline in confirmed cases. And now for the more concerning news. The head of the nation's coronavirus task force, epidemiologist Dr. Salim Abdul Karim, says a new variant of the virus, known as 501V2, is spreading quickly in South Africa.
Its affinity and its ability to bind to the human cell is now stronger, and that's what enables it to become a more efficient virus in the way it transmits. So this drastic change that we're seeing is being driven by a virus that certainly biologically looks like it can attach to human cells more efficiently.
He said recent tests are showing a much higher percentage of positive results than doctors saw in the first wave in the first half of last year. But he adds scientists haven't concluded that this variant is more severe. In fact, he said, current data suggests it is not. And he quickly allayed fears that the 1.5 million vaccine doses expected to land in South Africa by February won't work on this new strain.
I will not even attempt to speculate on that matter. I'll wait for the data. And certainly, we have no empiric evidence yet on whether vaccines are effective against this variant. Those studies are well underway.
And in a rare departure from science, Dr. Karim took a moment to talk politics, urging against calling this mutation the South Africa variant. When researchers first spotted this new variant, they were careful not to call it that in scientific papers. He explained why this matters.
There are variants across the world. And even if they're found in one country, we don't even know if that's where they originated from. And they will rapidly spread to many countries. The B117 is now in almost 50 countries. The 501YV2 variant is already available in more than 10 countries. Just like how we objected when the US president called SARS-CoV-2 the China virus, we should not call this variant by its country. We should call it by its name.
What does all this new science mean for the average South African? Not much, doctors said. Their basic guidance remains the same. Prevent transmission by staying home if you can, distance from others, wash your hands, and always wear a mask in public. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Refugee Agency reports thousands of Eritrean refugees trapped by fighting in Ethiopia's northern Tigray province are in desperate need of food and other essential supplies and services. Lisa Swan reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Ethiopian government has denied humanitarian agencies access to Eritrean refugee camps since it began its military offensive in early November. After repeated requests, the UN Refugee Agency reports the authorities finally granted the agency a one-time access to two refugee camps, Mai Eni and Adi Harush in northern Tigray. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says aid workers have found conditions in the camps dire and the Eritreans in desperate need of humanitarian aid.
Refugees were cut off from any supplies and services for more than 2 months. Wells were not functional without fuel for the pumps, leaving refugees to use water from a nearby creek for washing, cooking, and drinking, resulting in diarrhea-like illnesses.
Baluch says the one-time food distribution by the World Food Program 1 month ago is the only assistance the refugees have received for more than 2 months. He says plans for a second distribution are underway. In the meantime, UN staff who accessed the camps have distributed food to 25,000 refugees. Baluch says the number of beneficiaries is of concern because there were 50,000 Eritreans in the two camps before the conflict erupted. So it is likely many fled in fear of their safety.
Refugees told our staff that while they were not impacted directly from the fighting, they were threatened and harassed by various armed groups. The refugees told us they continue to have safety concerns, reporting armed gangs roam the camps at night, stealing and looting.
Before the conflict began, Tigray sheltered 96,000 Eritrean refugees in four camps. Baluch says the authorities continued to deny aid agencies access to the Shemelba and Hitsats refugee camps further north in Tigray. He says the UNHCR continues to receive reports of significant damage to those camps and of refugees fleeing in search of safety and food. Of even greater concern, he says, are worrying reports of refugees being abducted and forcibly returned to Eritrea, where their lives could be at risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Scientists in Beijing have developed a new gene therapy which can reverse some of the effects of aging in mice and extend their lifespans. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
Scientists in Beijing may be one step closer to having the answer to living longer and reversing the effects of aging. A group of biologists at the Chinese Academy of Sciences say they have developed a world-first new gene therapy and have been running tests on mice. It involved screening around 10,000 genes in search of particularly strong drivers of cellular aging. They identified 100 genes in that pool, but the one that really stood out was the CAT7. They then inactivated that CAT7 gene in the livers of mice. Professor Chu Jing explained some of their findings.
These mice show after 6 to 8 months, they show overall improved appearance and grip strength, and most importantly, they have extended lifespan for about 25%.
CAT7 is one of tens of thousands of genes found in the cells of mammals. The scientists also tested the function of the gene in human stem cells, human liver cells, and more. So far, there has been no detectable cellular toxicity or side effects in the mice. Despite this, the method still has a long way to go from being ready for human trials and will require a lot of funding and much more research. For now, there's no final answer to cheating death, but the scientists plan on testing the function of CAT7 in other cell types of humans and other organs of mice.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.